the producer can make or break a band's record. And on this week's Ludini Rock and Roll Circus podcast, we're going to tell you about the all-time greatest rock and metal producers. And we're also going to welcome very special guest, the band Stone Senate. It's going to be a great show. Stick around. Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. My name is Lou Lombardi, a.k.a. Ludini, and we have a great podcast for you guys today. We're going to be talking about rock and metal producers, the importance that the producer plays in the shaping the band's sound and arrangements, and how maybe sometimes the producer can make or even break the record. Hopefully not break it, but sometimes that happens as well. Anyways, we got a great lineup tonight of guests in on the podcast. We have, of course, the always amazing Keith the Hawk Hawkins from down there in New Orleans. Keith, what's up?
What's going on, everybody? All right, we're all good, and we're just going to talk producers and just hopefully we don't get too much. Nobody's nose is going to bleed. I don't think. No sucker punches. Let's keep it clean, and we'll see what happens.
Above the belt, and also in the studio live with me is the lovely and talented Miss Lily V6 from Rock Rage Radio.
Yep, Potlucks with Lily 6 Thursday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Rock Rage Radio.
All right, I want to give a shout out to and also we have the band Stone Senate. Let's just go ahead and do that before I get into sponsors and stuff. We've got Clint and James from the band Stone Senate. What's up, guys?
Hey. How are you guys? Pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you, man. And we're going to be talking to those guys here in a couple of minutes. But let's go ahead and get the business stuff out of the way. First, I want to give a shout out, as always, to Rock Rage Radio. Go to rockrageradio.com. Download the app. And you can listen to great guitar-driven rock 24/7. Doesn't cost you anything. It's cheaper than Sirius XM. And there's more variety and more content, and cooler people own the thing. So you definitely want to support it, right, Lily?
Yes. 24 hours of awesome music.
Yeah. I mean, what can you say about that?
Right. free.
It's free.
Free.
Like free. So also I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Wolf's Customs. You want to go to wolfscustoms.online. Look, man. You know, there's no sense in getting up there when you're rocking out, doing your, you know, streaming concerts or you know, some of the guys are actually getting back out there and playing again with the same boring-looking guitar that the last five bands had, all right? Wolf's Customs will hook you up with a custom finish on your guitar. They do a wide variety of different things, really make you stand out and make that guitar, bass, ukulele, snare drum.
Cowbell.
Triangle.
Didgeridoo.
Make that stand out and really make it part of the show. So talk to our good buddy, Chris Thunderwolf Dodson at wolfscustoms.online. And as always, if you want to get more information about the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus and the different projects I and we have, go to lulombardimusic.com. There's a free download there for an EP. There's lots of new music coming out. I've got a new band. Keith has a new band that I just freaking heard. Kick ass, dude. Your band rocks, dude.
That band is killing me because those kids, the saxophone player and the bass player, are 22 freaking years old, and they keep me on my toes. Every week I come here, they're throwing down. I'm like, I got to raise my game up.
Good, man.
So I practiced for Thursday's rehearsal. I practiced my ass off today. I'm just trying to keep up with these kids. They're playing their asses off. I mean, they don't miss a freaking note. And if you miss a note, I'm sure they're going to tell me about it. So I'm just like, I'm an old dog, but I got some new tricks for them, hopefully. But we'll see what happens, man.
They're keeping you young.
I did say that. They're keeping me young. Me and the singer, guitar player, who are just like in awe of them. I'm like, these kids are coming in and they play every damn instrument you want them to play. I mean, it's just like, I hope they don't like, all of a sudden want to play the drum because I'm out of a gig.
So let's go ahead before we get to, we're going to get into our topic in a little bit here, but these guys are really a kick-ass band. They're called Stone Senate, and I'm I've got Clint and James with us. Clint, you're the are you the lead singer, guitar player?
Yeah, that's me, man, singing and playing guitar. We got three guitars and then bass and drums.
Wow, you know? You got like the Skinner thing going on.
Yeah, man, it's a cool feel, man. You know what I mean? It's very full, you know, which is awesome, man. You know, so.
And James, we have James as well. James, what do you do in the band?
I play guitar.
Okay. Okay. So you're one of the lead guitar players?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I got you. I got you. And so give us a little bit of background. You guys can kind of go back and forth, fill in the gaps a little bit about, give us the sort of like Reader's Digest version about how the band got started and kind of like what made you guys want to form a band.
Well, you know, James and then our bass player and drummer all kind of grew up together and stuff around Meridian, Mississippi. Long story short, I met Paul, the bass player, about 12 years ago here in Nashville, and he and I were playing with some other folks. And then after a couple of years of that, we needed a new drummer. So he brought his brother up, David Zettler from Meridian, to play drums with us. And then after that, we had a guitar player leave. And so James was available, and they already, like I said, they already knew each other. So they called James, and then the final piece of the band was our other lead guitar player, Ted Hennington, who had already known James and Paul and David for several years as well, man. So it was funny how it all came together, man. You know, James, I'll let you jump in here on this too, brother.
Yeah, it was a conspiracy, dude. A bunch of people wanted to take over a team.
You came in, you're like, I'm taking this band over.
We just said, okay, we're gonna go up there to Tennessee and just own this thing, man. What do you say? You know, it really is cool how it worked out. Like Clint was saying, that Paul and I knew each other since we were puppies and started one of our first bands together.
Oh, cool.
Way back when. And David was the little brother that was tagging along, you know, playing drums when his older brother was the original drummer. And when he'd step away, we're on a break, David would get up there, and I was like, watch this guy, he's gonna be hell. And sure enough, he turned out, he ends up the guy. So it's really cool. And then Ted been a friend of mine for years, and I knew Clint from up in Nashville. I'd lived up there for a while doing sessions and writing and whatnot. And it all just it was kind of a meant to be thing.
What made you want to play guitar, James? What grabbed you, man? What got you, you know, what bug bit you that said, damn it, I gotta play this damn thing?
I gotta give credit to my dad. He played mainly just for his own enjoyment. You know, it was just something he would sit on the foot of his bed and play guitar and sing the songs of his era, you know?
Yeah.
I, of course, wasn't supposed to touch that guitar. I was a little kid. His hard-earned money for that guitar, I'm not supposed to touch it. Well, my grandmother would fall asleep during As the World Turns, and what did I do? One day he comes in, and I'm doing all the stuff he was doing. And he says, okay, well, we got to do this kid. From there, I started out playing bluegrass and everything else. And then, of course, you know, the rock bug bit me when I got my first Kiss album at a dance. They were spinning records at this dance, and it was Kiss Alive.
Oh, wow.
And I said, all right, those guys are having more fun than ZZ Top. As much as I love ZZ Top, Billy Gibbons was a huge influence as a kid. But then all that, I went, oh, my God, you know, those guys, they're having way too much fun. I got to look into this. And, of course, I just went head over.
One of our listeners is actually asking James if you sing because he likes your deepness in your voice.
Yeah, you have a cool speaking voice. So you should start a podcast.
I sing a couple of things, mostly backup vocals. I back way up from the microphone. And Clint's got that territory covered quite well.
Hey, Clint, tell us about like how you, what like got you excited to like want to like get into music, not just play the radio, but like actually want to play.
Man, you know, it was growing up. My family was very musical, you know. My folks worked in the music industry.
Cool.
All my life. And so I grew up listening to all kinds of different music. And I guess when I was 10 or 11, I really started getting into, like, you know, the Doors, and Allman Brothers and stuff. And so that's when it really dawned on me. I was like, man, this could be really cool, you know, because these guys are really cool, you know. And so I started playing drums and then went on to bass guitar in another band, and then picked up the, you know, the guitar and stuff, and then just kind of kept doing it, you know, all through high school and college and stuff. And then and luckily ended up with all these guys, man, last few years. And it's like James said, it was kind of meant to be, you know. It was a cool deal. For
I was checking out your bio, and this is something that's like really kick ass. And so those of you who are listening, you know, our audience loves, you know, the real deal, real rock and roll. And you guys built the audience by doing it the way we like it. I was going to say we're supposed to do it, by just hammering it out, going out and gigging and gigging and gigging and gigging and, you know, building that fan base. So, like, what are you going to do now? Like, what's the situation now? Because, of course, we know the way the world went sideways there for about a year. What's the sort of plan with gigs and touring?
Well, you know, we over the pandemic the past year, but we've done a few little private parties here and there, but actually going out Thursday to do a few shows down at Daytona Bike Week.
Awesome.
And nice. So really excited about that, man, because it's been a long time since we've done more than just one show, you know. And and so it's going to be a hell of a good time, man. We're going to do 7 nights down there, six nights at the Broken Spoke and one night at the Iron Horse Saloon.
I think everybody's going to be touring Florida this year.
Yeah, well, both of those bars are amazing bars. I've been to both, and that's going to be so much fun.
Hey,
yeah, it'll be cool.
What? So you guys have a single out right now. Is this something that's on your album called One, or is this like a new song?
One was the first EP we did back in 2015.
Okay.
And then we did a follow-up EP back in 2016, early 17, called Star City. And then during the pandemic, we went in and cut 13 brand new songs.
Oh, cool.
And we had plenty of time to spend on it. it worked out well, man. But this is the second single off of the upcoming album. The album's going to be called Between the Dark and the Light. And this single is called Slow Crusade.
Tell us about this song. I'm not allowed to play music over Facebook and YouTube. So we're going to kind of like just kind of tell everybody, have them go to the website and check it out. But tell us about the song Slow Crusade and why you guys released it as your single.
Well, you know, the first single we did was called Whiskey Helps. And it was a real kind of party anthem, you know, rocker.
Oh, yeah.
And so this one, we wanted to kind of show, you know, I guess more the songwriting craft, you know, and the way we broke it down with some acoustic guitars and stuff. And James and Ted, our other guitar player, the three of us put it together, and it was it came together really, really quickly, it worked out great, man. You know, James, what are your thoughts on that, dude? I don't want to keep talking through you out.
Well, Clint came in with such a cool title. I mean, that's kind of an intriguing title. And when we wrote the song, we knew we had something different. And thankfully, on this record, we got to work with Toby Wright producing, who's worked with Metallica, Ozzy, Kiss, Alice in Chains.
Awesome.
His sense of adventure in the studio, you know, was a great match for all our twisted imaginations. So we, you know, we really went for it on it. You know, it was something we said, well, we're capable of doing this. You know, we all come from playing a lot of different kinds of music. We all appreciate a lot of different kinds of music. Now, granted, we're a rock band, and live, that's where we really live. But it was really neat to explore something different. And the new record really, it's like that. It takes you on a ride. It's not a one-trick pony kind of thing.
Cool. And so how do folks find you guys online? Other than going to Daytona to see you, how do they find you on the internet?
We're on all the social media.
You can go to our website, Stone Street. Oh.
That's what I was trying to get you to say.
I'm sorry.
I was trying to get you to say the website.
I'm sorry, guys. It's stonesenate.com.
You're cool.
I apologize. I didn't mean to talk over James there, man.
Well, I'll let you guys fight about that after the podcast. Quit talking over me. So what's going on with the band? You guys getting a lot of fist fights? You guys like Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey? Like what?
Oh
no, man! You know,
there was a pause.
There was a little bit of silence there. James got a big shitty grin on his face.
Yeah. No, man, we all get along great. I mean, but you spend 2/3 of the year in a printer van together, you know, there's going to be times you butt heads. My God. Yeah, you do 150 shows a year, you'll butt heads. It's like right now, though, with the pandemic and everything, when we all meet up tomorrow in Nashville, it's going to be just a blast. Because, you know, when you see each other as much as we have seen each other for the last several years, all of a sudden, you know, you hit a brick wall going 1,000 miles an hour. Yeah. And we all just kind of finished the record, except for, like, Clint said, the odd gig here or there. We haven't seen much of each other. Yeah. So it's going to be like, it's going to be a joy.
Family reunion.
Getting back out and doing what we do.
Yeah. I'm sure. All kidding aside. So, guys, go to stonesenate.com. And from there's all the jumping off to all the places on the internet. Some great video content there as well. I think the band is, I think you guys really kick ass. Really dig it. I love what you're doing. I love the vibe, the look, the feel. Good stuff. I have a private, a closed Facebook group, and we shared the Whiskey Helps today with everybody, and it got a lot of likes.
Cool.
You know, so that's we're all about the rock and roll over there. I knew everybody would dig it. That's good shit.
Thank you, cool, guys.
All right, guys, go to everybody out there in podcast land. Everybody's listening. Go to stonesenate.com. Check these guys out as things open up. You know, be aware that they could be coming to a town near you, hopefully. So check them out. Stonesenate.com, guys. Stick around, man. We'll bring you into the conversation. We're going to be talking about we're talking about producers tonight. So, anyways, thanks, guys, for hanging out. Let's go ahead and get the regular program started.
Woo.
And do you guys know Keith?
Yeah.
You want to tell everybody what a producer is for the newcomers out there. Give them the sort of Reader's Digest, abbreviated.
I mean, the musicians are going to go in and play their parts, but the producer is going to make that shit sing. That sound that you hear on whatever you're listening to. The producer is going to be turning them knobs, making that shit sound the way that it is presented to the public. And they're going to be, unfortunately, again, it's going to make or break maybe many a band's career, but making that album sound good and hopefully working with the band, but still having the band's vision and coming along with that and making their vision and everybody as one, that's what you want to do. And I think that everybody on the list tonight is going to be hopefully well respected in the rock and metal community as the producers. And I'm sure we're gonna say a few that maybe you don't know, maybe we missed a few, but it's just there's so many.
Yeah, it's,
but
it's a lot.
At the end of the day, you're going to, whatever you're hearing come out of, you know, that product is going to be based on what that producer did. And there's some badasses out there that just do their thing and know how to get it done. So this is what we're talking about tonight.
I look at it like this. You know, the guitar player plays the guitar, the singer sings, the drummer plays the drums, bass player plays the bass, etc. The producer plays the band, and the producer
they're pulling the strings, they're turning the knobs, they're making everything go.
They play the band in the studio. They make the things. They put that all together. A great producer will tell you something like no. That chorus is too long. You got to straighten that out. Or that guitar solo is too fast, too fancy. You know, we want something catchier. I mean, that's the kind of things a producer will do. Those lyrics, no, that's stupid. Rewrite it. Famous incident before we actually get started here is Chet Atkins producing Crazy, a Willie Nelson song, and Willie had called the song stupid. And Chet was like, whoa, what are you doing? It's stupid. No, you got to come up with a different word. Nobody wants a song called stupid. So that's the value of a great producer. Or we would have Patsy Cline singing stupid. So anyhow, let's go ahead. We're going to go around the room and we're going to start with our lovely and talented Miss Von Six.
Talented. Okay. Well, let's start it off with a bang.
You're talented, Lily. Now tell them how you do it. Do your thing. And then you're talented. Make them know who you are.
I'm talented at making this hair look silver. Anyway, Roy Thomas Baker is going to be my starting out with a bang here.
Who the hell is Roy Thomas Baker?
I think you know who he is.
I
have
no idea.
Anyway, he's an English record producer. Produced pop and rock songs since the 70s. He started his career at Decca Records at the age of 14. So he started super young in the music biz.
He was a baby.
I know, he was a teeny little guy. He's worked with where he worked with Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, David Bowie, The Who, Nazareth, Santana, The Mothers of Invention, so on and so on and so on. And then he co-founded Neptune, which is Trident's record company. Baker met the rock band Queen and began a working relationship with them that lasted for 5 albums. Queen, Queen II, Sheer Heart Attack, A Night at the Opera, and Jazz. Getting a number of awards for that, including Grammys and the Guinness Book of World Records for Best Hit Song, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Dang.
And then he signed a multi-album production deal with CBS.
We'll forgive him for jazz.
Well, we all make it. He then worked with The Grasshoppers.
Stephen Queen don't like that album.
He's worked with Guns N' Roses, Alice Cooper, Foreigner, Ozzy Osbourne, Motley Crue's Too Fast for Love, Devo, Dusty Springfield, Cheap Trick, Smashing Pumpkins, and of course, he produced the heavy metal motion picture soundtrack from 1982, which is one of my favorite soundtracks.
Dang, Lily. You come out swinging, girl.
Well, that's one of my favorites.
Holy cow.
Mouthful.
Wow.
All right.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, I'm not going to say anything yet. Keith, what do you got?
I'm going to start at the beginning where rock and roll came from with Sam Phillips. You ever heard of him? He had a little thing called Sun Records, and he had a little studio in Memphis, Tennessee that launched the career of just some, you know, people that you might have heard of in the day. Elvis Presley, Carl Perkins, Roy Orbison, Jerry Lee Lewis, even Howlin' Wolf came in, Johnny Cash. I mean, the list goes on and on. What would become, maybe it wasn't at the time, called rock and roll, but what would become rock and roll is the creation of Sam Phillips and the Sun Studios in Memphis, Tennessee, launching those careers of those great songwriters and singers and just taking them to another level. So Sam Phillips, God rest his soul, because he's not with us anymore. But Sam Phillips, I think, started that. Him and another guy from Chicago, but in case you name that, I won't take it away from you. Sam Phillips is that one of the starters of that rock and roll vibe, man, for sure.
Okay, I'm going to go with, I have a whole list too, but I'm going to go with a guy. I got on a kick tonight, and I was listening to an album records that I grew up listening to. And one of my favorite records when I was growing up was Slow Train Coming by Bob Dylan. And this is an album produced by the legendary Jerry Wexler. And Jerry has worked with everybody from Ray Charles to the Allman Brothers, Led Zeppelin, Dire Straits. In fact, the reason why Mark Knopfler ended up as the guitar player on Slow Train is because of Jerry Wexler. I mean, that's the kind of thing that a great producer does. Doesn't just, make sure it's got enough bass and treble or whatever, but will say, hey, I think this musician would be perfect on this song or on this album. He was born in the Bronx in New York City. During his time, he worked for Billboard magazine, became a partner in Atlantic Records in 1953, with some names you may have heard of, like Ahmet Erdogan, maybe a guy maybe heard of. Shows up in, not himself, but an actor plays him in the movie Ray, about Ray Charles. Ooh. So that's how important he was. Recorded with, worked with Wilson Pickett, Aretha Franklin, oversaw Dusty Springfield's highly acclaimed album, Dusty Memphis. In 68, he and Ahmet signed Led Zeppelin to Atlantic Records. So, also has his hand and fingers in the sort of business side of things. And as I mentioned earlier, he talked about, he worked with the, on the Grammy Award Gotta Serve Somebody album. Slow Train Coming. The song that won the Grammy was Gotta Serve Somebody. Won the award in 1980 when Wexler agreed to produce. He was unaware of the nature of the material and waited that awaited him. Naturally, I wanted to do the album in Muscle Shoals as Bob did, but we decided to prep in L.A. where Bob lived. That's when I learned that the songs were about being a born-again Christian. I like the irony of Bob coming to me, the wandering Jew. That's what he refers himself to as, to get the Jesus feel. But I had no idea he was on this born-again Christian trip until he started to evangelize me. I said, Bob, you're dealing with a 62-year-old confirmed Jewish atheist. I'm hopeless. Let's just make an album. And that's true, true Jerry Wexler. There's a great documentary out there about the making of this album. And if you guys can find it, you definitely want to check it out. What do you got, Lily?
Word. So I'm going to just piggyback off of my previous pick and go with Mike Stone. Another English producer, worked with Queen on multiple albums.
Something against Americans or something?
No, I'm just, okay. Yeah, I'm building on it. Blue Oyster Cult, Foreigner, Journey on multiple albums, Kiss, Asia, Lou Reed, Whitesnake, Joe Walsh. He began his career as an assistant recording engineer at Abbey Road Studios in England, which is kind of cool. While still a teenager, Stone worked on some sessions for the Beatles, Beatles for Sale in 1964. He then became a runner at Trident Studios, who, where Roy Thomas Baker, he started working with him, who I talked about before, to engineer the unique vocal layering for Bohemian Rhapsody. Again, Bohemian Rhapsody. After Baker's departure as Queen's producer, the band hired Stone as their engineer for his expertise in overdubbing vocals. By the early 80s, Stone had produced popular top-selling albums for both Asia and Journey. And he was scheduled to oversee the remastering of the Queen catalog, but he unfortunately died in 2002.
Bummer.
He had a little bit of a drinking problem and had complications
just
with that.
Just a wee bit.
You know.
Just a wee. He liked the touch of the recipe here and there.
He liked a wee dram, that's all.
Brian May's Queen loved him. He said in the eulogy, Mike's production style, big chorus building and hitting hard, the ability to treat vocals uniquely and find space in a recording have influenced a generation of young producers. So, very cool guy. Worked with one of the other cool guys that I talked about and Queen.
Amazing, amazing.
And Beatles.
What do you got, Hawk?
I'm going to go with this guy, Steve Albini. Steve Albini is the master of getting that hard and heavy sound of a lot of punk rock bands that would go on to be, he would go on to work with like bands like the Pixies, even Nirvana, the Stooges, the Ramones. I mean, the guy just has that knack for bringing out that heavy, punky, raw sound in bands, and just has the ability to just capture that organic thing that those bands and that kind of music does. And he's been on a lot more than that, but I mean, it's hard to keep up with these people's resume. Go, that shit's as long as Lou's leg or something else, whatever.
Okay, good one. I got a short but sweet one because you were talking about punk rock, and I want to mention Butch Vig, because Butch took this band, you may guys have heard of, it's a punk band called Nirvana, and made them sound like way huge. Just
way
freaking enormous.
Massive.
That drum sound, when the drums kick in on Smells Like Teen Spirit, that is so freaking slamming. That is...
Isn't that funny, though? Not to interrupt you, isn't that funny that Butch Vig is what? He's a drummer.
Yep. Go figure. You know, he knew what it took to take these guys who were doing this kind of rough music that was, you know, different. It was out there, it's alternative rock, and say, well, how do we make sure that this like kicks ass and sounds awesome on the radio? And I mean, I think he was like seminal in kind of just kicking off. I know, Lily, you don't like grunge, but kicking off
it's
grunge
still important.
and really kind of like getting that going, because if that record sounded the way Kurt Cobain wanted it to sound, Kurt actually did not like Butch's approach.
Yeah, he argued with him.
Yeah, he wanted it to sound more down and dirty, like a, you know, like an old like Dead Kennedys album or something like that. But Butch won out and just made this huge sounding records produced really, really well, and Kurt is wrong. Sorry, because well, it's amazing sounding.
Apparently, what he told Kurt to persuade him was the Beatles did this. So.
That stops anybody in their tracks right there.
So that changed Kurt.
He evoked the B word.
Right. You know, the holy B.
What do you got, Lil?
I'm going to go with a little bit of harder heavy metal. Andy Sneap, another English producer. Maybe I don't like American ones.
Jesus
I don't
Christ,
know.
You don't even. This is so anti-American.
Please tell me
podcast.
This is not somebody who worked on Bohemian Rhapsody. Because last week we talked about Bohemian Rhapsody.
No, this is harder stuff, I just said. He's a record producer with over 100 albums to his name. Most have been produced at his backstage recording studio in rural Derbyshire. I always want to say that wrong. He has worked, the most prominent one is Deliverance by Opeth, Disarm the Descent by Killswitch Engage. But he has also worked with Judas Priest, Accept, Blaze Bailey, Saxon, Amon Amarth, Arch Enemy, one of my favorite bands, Megadeth. So he's on the harder end of the metal. He holds distinction of having been credited as a producer, mixer, and engineer on all six of Testament's albums since The Gathering from 1999. And as well as all seven Exodus releases since the live album and Another Lesson in Violence from 97. And he also mixed Megadeth's show from the DVD The Big Four live from Sofia, Bulgaria, also featuring Metallica, Slayer, and Anthrax. So he's worked with the big guys.
Dang!
The big guns.
Dang. All right. Good one. Good one. What do you got? What do you got, Hawk?
I got a guy that's probably more on the somewhat modern end of things, but this guy has been with this band, and you know I have a special place in my heart for this band. This guy's Nigel Godrich.
He's on my list, too.
So he's a British producer, but he's worked on pretty much worked on every friggin' Radiohead album that they put out. Anything that they do, he has his hands on. But the beautiful thing about that, regardless, once again, that's a very love or hate band for a lot of people. That dude lets them be them, and that's why they're successful. He doesn't get in their way, but he just kind of reins it in. And that's why that dude is awesome, because I don't even know what else he's worked on, but as soon as I seen that, I was like, that's okay with me, buddy. You know, because he's had his hands in everything they do. And like I said, they're a great band. I think they're a very important rock band, if not the most important rock band of the last 25, 30 years, but in my opinion. But it's where he lets them be them. He's not doing the whole, like, let's put out another album. It sounds like the last one kind of thing. Like bands that you hear, like, you know, Nickelback and bands like that. Nothing against Nickelback, but they kind of sound the same every album. But Nigel Godrich is the guy that has his hands in all the Radiohead shit, and he still lets them be them and do their thing, and it's successful. So how many producers can actually say that? Because there's hit and misses with everybody. But even the bad Radiohead albums, they're still a lot better than a lot of garbage you hear today.
He was sort of one that could work around the band and still make
That's awesome. I mean, you'd read some stuff, you know, about him that just, like, he just lets them do their thing, but he kind of makes sense. But sometimes I think bands just like to, you know, I've been there myself, where you just get in a studio and you just start to fucking jam things. And as a jam becomes not a song, it's just a jam at that point. You want a song, that's where a producer comes in and is like, yeah, this is bullshit at this point. We don't need an 8-minute opus. We need a song. So let's do that, you know. So I think that's where people like Nigel Godrich come in, and anybody else on this list is going to say the same thing, where they're going to give you the band's identity, hopefully let you have creative freedom and kind of hone that magic that you want to give the public.
All right, great pick. I'm going to go for the throat on this next one. This producer. The records he worked on were all my favorite records when I was in junior high and high school. I'll just say it. He grew up in South Africa and was a fan of Slim Whitman, which played into his career a little bit later on in his life when he married Shania Twain. I am speaking, of course, of Robert John Mutt Lang. Everybody just calls him Mutt Lang. Worked... You know, crafted the sound, basically crafted Def Leppard's giant sound, that drum sound that sounds like, you know, like a punch in the head exploding. That's my line. Worked with the Foreigner, the Boomtown Rats, Michael Bolton. I just heard Drive by the Cars today, and that snare, that's Mutt Lange. Like, that's Mutt Lange. Brian Adams, Huey Lewis in the News. I mean, it's just a who's who of who's who's. Award-winning record after award-winning record. But later on, many guys may or may not know, married a country singer and star, Shania Twain, and went on to, they turned Nashville upside down because, Nashville is doing its thing, and they show up with this whole new sound and way of producing and putting songs together, and it raised a lot of eyebrows and pissed a lot of people off, but they had giant, giant hits. I just had to talk about Mutt Lange because those records were not the Shania Twain so much, but the Def Leppard, the Brian Adams, the AC/DC. I mean, that was just the absolute.
I mean, hey,
shit,
man, the dude did Back in Black. What are you gonna do? You know, that's something else right there. I mean, and he's an ugly dude and married a hot chick, so that gives us a lot of us hope out there. So that's good for you, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. No, so yeah, Mutt Lange. If you like the Def Leppard music. I most associate that with, and it took forever just to get the drum sound, and they played.
Fan of the drum sound on Pyromani. I think it sounds too processed. I mean, it doesn't sound. And after that, he lost his arm, so we're going to give him a little mulligan on that one. But I think that the Pyromani to me is their best record, and I just don't like the drum sound on, like, especially the big hits like Photograph and songs like that. It just sounds a little too like mechanical
too
me.
Mechanical for
and
you.
And it's just not my thing. It doesn't sound organic enough to me. I mean, I think the snare sounds good, but I mean, you listen to something like Back in Black, that shit is just sounding, that sounds great.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's, it is kind of, I don't know.
AC/DC only worked with him on three albums, but their sound and songwriting and everything were completely influenced by him moving forward. Just like everything they did. And he's also Mutt is also a songwriter. He has hit songs. He wrote Everything I Do It For You from the Robin Hood. Now, it's not the greatest song in the world, I know, but it was a big hit. So you got to give the devil his due on that. So anyways, Mutt Lange. Mutt.
The Mutt.
What do you got, Lilith?
The next one on my list is Terry Dates, American record producer.
American. Not their French fry. One of them freedom fries.
Specializing in rock genres, especially heavy metal. Well known for his work with Metal Church, Dream Theater, Soundgarden. He's sort of a little bit all over the place, by the way. Like, he also did Sir Mix-a-Lot and Limp Bizkit. So
you need to take him off the list immediately.
This is stuff that I like
kidding.
But Overkill, Pantera's A Vulgar Display of Power, very important record. White Zombie, Astro Creep 2000, Deftones, Slipknot, Limp Bizkit, and all the ones that I do and do not like.
Sepultura.
And he most recently worked with the Deftones in 2020 with the album Ohms and the 20th anniversary edition of Pantera's Reinventing the Steel in 2020. So he's got a lot of different kind of mixed
kick
stuff
ass.
Under his belt. So
kick ass, man.
Cool guy.
You got some good picks on here.
Soundgarden. He worked with Soundgarden, Mother Love Bone. Yeah.
Yeah, that's that's not too shabby there, Chief.
Yeah, good pick, though. What do you got, Keith?
You're gonna go for the throat. I'm gonna go for the back of the throat. Okay, is that all right?
I'm gonna
go
with violent tonight.
I'm gonna go with Rick Rubin because Rick Rubin's done it all.
Because there's two other guys on the podcast, and we gotta I gotta look at the testosterone going here.
Rick Rubin's done everything from the Beastie Boys and LL Cool J and Public Enemy to frickin' Slayer and System of a Down. He's played, he's done Red Hot Chili Peppers. He did Adele's 21 album, if you look that up. That shit is, he is all over the place. Not only does he have a cool beard, but he just got a good ear.
Clint, it's about the cool beard.
Beards are in.
I cannot grow a beard.
I'm inspiring to get that beard.
Are you guys, hey Clint, James, are you guys Sabbath fans at all?
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, just your opinion. Because I'm not going to say it. Did you guys hear 13, the record they did with Rick Rubin?
A little bit. Isn't that the one with Rage Against the Machine's drummer playing drums on that?
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. I heard a little bit of it. It sounded great, man. I mean, it was like rocking it? Stuff. You know?
I
didn't hear the whole thing. But.
I think that the drums and the bass sound great on there, but I just don't think that Rick understood Tony Iommi's guitar sound. Like, it's just like, it doesn't sound like him. So I was like, my opinion, just my opinion. I just would not. Yeah. But I mean, Rick Rubin, what the hell? I mean, come on, Rick Rubin, you know.
I mean, there's, you know, every once in a while there's a dud in the bunch, you know.
I just
mean?
Opinion, too. What the hell do I know? You know, how many records?
Every firecracker's going to let off, you know what I mean?
Give him props for just the Johnny Cash stuff.
Yo, he brought Johnny amazing. Cash. Yeah.
He reinvented Johnny Cash's sound and made really? It like, it was like cool to like Johnny Cash. The people were like, oh, I don't want to listen to this old country dude. And I was like, all of a sudden he's doing like Soundgarden covers and Nine Inch Nails covers. And it's like Rick Rubin's just honing that shit. And he's like making this dark, sophisticated record. And it's like Johnny Cash was like cool to like by everybody. Like kids were liking Johnny Cash and they were like, who the fuck is Johnny Cash? I was like, that's an old school dude, but you know, he's everybody loves him. So yeah, he reinvented absolutely. Johnny Cash's sound.
Yeah,
so that goes to show you what a good producer can do.
Yeah, no, that's a great, that's a really good point. Yeah, who doesn't love that record? That's absolutely amazing.
Legit.
Okay, I can't believe no one said it yet, but I'm just gonna throw it out there, especially Lily with all her British stuff.
Oh, I got a British one next for you.
So. Oh, good.
Go ahead. Great. Go ahead, Governor.
I'm going to throw Governor. We got to talk about Sir George Martin.
I was kind of waving around with that one, but you know, it's.
I mean, I know it seems kind of obvious, but you know.
It was like my mic drop moment, but go ahead.
Wow, he just ruined his whole day.
John,
it was like George Martin worked with the Beatles. See ya. Boom. That was it.
That was all you could do. You're going to walk out the room. I mean, there's really not much to say, but all that great stuff they did with the editing and everything, you know, yes, Paul and John and those guys had influence on that, but it was George that was really able to make all that happen for them, and they would think of stuff, we want a marching band on this, okay, we need a symphony orchestra, okay, we need a string quartet, yeah, and he would go and he would find a way to, like, make all that stuff work for them. And
he's a genius, man. Yeah, straight up genius.
Absolutely amazing. So, producer of the Beatles, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What can you say? The Beatles. The B word.
The B word.
Boom! Mic drop. So Lily.
Martin Birch is my next one.
Martin Birch,
British music producer. Became known for engineering and producing albums recorded predominantly by British rock bands, including Deep Purple, Rainbow, Whitesnake, Black Sabbath, Blue Oyster Cult, and of course, one of my favorites, who I try to mention in every podcast, Iron Maiden.
Iron.
Began his career in music as an audio engineer with Jeff Beck, Fleetwood Mac, and Deep Purple. He retired in 1992 after producing Iron Maiden's Fear of the Dark album. It was the last of the 10 records he produced with the group, appeared on Iron Maiden's music video, Holy Smoke. 2 years before his retirement. Unfortunately, we did lose him August 9th of 2020 to undisclosed reasons. Probably COVID. That's what they're going to say.
I think he was doing blow off the stripper's ass.
I mean, that's what I would be doing if I was him at this point. Anyway.
Know what I'm saying?
There were tributes paid by David Coverdale, Geezer Butler, Wendy Dio, and members of Iron Maiden offered a lengthy tribute to Birch on their official website. So, very happily remembered man, and I mean Rainbow, Whitesnake, Black Sabbath, Iron Maiden.
He's in the Iron Maiden behind the music.
Yeah,
he's very interesting guy. Very cool.
Iron Maiden.
What do you got, Hawk?
I'm gonna go a little bit more froggy on your ass.
Froggy.
So I'm gonna go David Bottrell.
Who?
David Bottrell is responsible for 2 to 3 Tool albums, several King Crimson albums, and a lot of other just awesome shit. He worked with Muse also. And this is a quote from David Bottrell: I would just like to work with people that have an identity to their music. That's what I like to do. So if you look in all those bands, Tool, King Crimson, Muse, those bands sound unique. They have a unique sound, and he brings that out of those bands. He worked on 1995's Thrack, which is a great King Crimson record, and he's worked on Lateralis and Anima or Enema, whatever you want to call it, the Tool album. So that's bringing out a the very unique sounding bands and bringing out their true potential and just once again doing their thing. But the guy is maybe not the household name, but he brings out those more heavy prog rock kind of bands, and it's, I just didn't want him to leave him off the list because I think he deserves a little head nod there. So
good pick, good pick. I'm gonna go back to my generation, the 80s. Steve Lillywhite began his career in 1977, credited with over 500 records, collaborated with, get ready, XTC, Big Country, Susie and the Banshees, Simple Minds, Psychedelic Furs, David Byrne, Talking Heads, Kirsty McCall, as well as U2, did some of the greatest work for U2. Just, you know, really helped them craft their sound in a lot of different ways. Of course, worked with some classic bands like the Rolling Stones and Peter Gabriel. The Killers were more current act. Dave Matthews Band, Fish, Counting Crows. Just, you know, the list goes on and on and on of just music that it touched so many people and was so important to an entire generation. So that's about all that I got on that, Steve Lillywhite.
You know what I can say about him? Drums.
Yeah.
Listen to any album, I haven't heard them all, but it's even those several that you rattled off there, all Steve Lee White's albums have one thing in common. They sound huge, but the freaking drums on every one of his technique, whatever he does, is just perfect because he gets the best drum sound maybe out there today. I mean, he just gets, he captures the organic sound of the kit without him making it sound too gated,
too processed,
or any,
yeah,
like, you know, too processed sounding, like Pyromania in my land. And but the Steve Lillywhite is just got that, he's a freaking genius when it comes to that, getting that organic hone in that sound, man. And it's like with the, especially with the Dave Matthews Band and U2 and like a lot of that early 80s stuff, even though a lot of stuff was getting into the synth keyboard style and electronic drums, he was still able to capture till then, up into the Killers and all the modern shit he did, where he's getting that sound where it sounds like a drummer. So got that human element to it. That's what I like.
Lily, do we have any shout outs or any folks watching that you want to say hey to?
We have Bill Damiano, Michael Golds, Chris Thunderwolf Dodson, Beth Petternell. Is that how it's?
Yes.
Okay. Beth,
the usual suspects.
The usual suspects are on right now. Actually, that's Tim Johnson. Mentioned Butch Vig. John Rasso said, I'm a good plumber. I don't know what that means. And David Broussard said, great subject. And also,
he is a good plumber. I actually had him do some work for me. He is a good plumber.
Johnny,
so I'm, yes,
Rasso,
you are a good plumber. And he works at a very, you know, I'm not going to say cheap, but he works at a good price.
And Bill Damiano actually said my next pick, which is Bob Ezrin.
Oh, okay.
So, would be one of my favorites, obviously. He is best known for working with Alice Cooper, Aerosmith, Pink Floyd, Kiss, Motley Crue, Peter Gabriel, Deep Purple, and his career has spanned four decades, and it continued in the 21st century with acts such as Deftones and 30 Seconds to Mars. He's basically the Alice Cooper guy. Like, he's worked with Alice Cooper forever. He worked with him when he decided to do a solo career, did Welcome to My Nightmare, and also produced the best-selling Kiss album, Destroyer, in 1976. And he also has, like, he also produced a live television extravaganza to reopen the Louisiana Superdome in New Orleans, starring Green Day and U2 in 1993. And he also co-founded a computer software company called Seventh Level, which developed and published educational and entertainment CD-ROMs. What the hell is that? Including a highly popular and groundbreaking series of Monty Python games. So...
All right,
super
good,
cool,
good pick. This is we're gonna be kind of wrapping up soon. Yep. So, Keith, what you got, bro? You got one more? I'm gonna ask.
Yeah,
I
can't believe
John
this. This
Clint's
is one
picks.
Of my favorite. Go ahead. What?
No, go ahead.
This guy. I mean, when I was researching, like, the most respected, the most well known, this guy wasn't on any list that I've seen. I looked at like several of them, and it's amazing because this body of work is pretty impressive. Brendan O'Brien. Nobody mentioned Brendan O'Brien on any of the freaking lists I've seen. The dude's worked with, you know, just small bands like Aerosmith, you know, the Black Crowes. He was on he did the Black Crowes' first album. He's been in engineering and producing for years. Rage Against the Machine, STP, AC/DC, Pearl Jam, King's X, Temple of the Dog. He also won a Grammy for Bruce Springsteen's The Rising album. So, I mean, this guy's been had his hands in a lot of different styles of bands, all rocking though, and still just knows how to put his stamp on the music. And I think it's another person that probably doesn't come in and, you know, kind of do that whole, like, you know, dictator thing. He seems to really get the most out of his bands, because with the albums he's worked on, those bands have thrived. I mean, that shit sounds great. I mean, so he knows how to get a good drum sound, which is important, I'm sorry. And it's just one of those guys I've never seen, like, in the top echelon of producers on a list that I've seen. You get all the other, you know, household names, but Brendan O'Brien, I think, is a very unsung hero, if you will, of rock producing. He's not mentioned enough, if you ask me.
Great pick. I had forgotten about Brendan. Great one. I'm going to wrap up real quick with Eddie Kramer. Worked with people you may have heard of, like Eric Clapton, Jimi Hendrix, the Kinks, Led Zeppelin, Kiss. Kiss had a rocky relationship with Eddie Kramer. John Mellencamp, Carlos Santana. All those like great guys that like sort of set down what rock was going to be. Eddie was there for all that. The sort of second rock, you know, not the early rock, but the sort of like, you know, that late 60s, early 70s type stuff. Yeah, the second coming. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Small Faces, bands like that. So Eddie Kramer, you guys can look up more. James?
Yeah.
Favorite producer?
Toby Wright.
There you go. I knew you were going to say that. That's right. That's a good pick, man. That's a good pick.
Metallica, Kiss, Alice in Chains. Discography mile long, but y'all are forgetting a couple guys. John, Andy, and Glenn Zeppelin, Free.
Yeah, I actually had Glenn Jones on my list, and we ran out of damn time. That's what happened.
Sir George Martin, you can't forget Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys.
Uh-huh,
you know?
Good one.
Truth.
When left to his own devices, I mean, he was pure genius.
Absolutely, good picks. Clint, you want to chime in on anything?
Well, I have to agree with James on Toby Wright. For sure, you know, Alice in Chains is one of my favorites. And I was also thinking Paul Rothschild or Bruce Botnick, the guys that did the door stuff, too, you know, which I was a big fan of as well, man. And I've learned a lot, man. I thought I knew a lot about music, and this has been a really, really cool conversation to be part of, man. I've really enjoyed listening to you guys.
Cool, man.
Throw Bob Rock in there while you're at it.
I had Bob Rock on my list.
It was somebody else I had on my list too. Because I mean, he had, you know, everybody knows the Black Album, and he's worked with Motley Crue and a ton of other bands. But it's like, but then there's just so many that you just can't. Yeah, you can't. It seems like you can't cover them all. That's what I mean. I was like, we said a lot, and then we probably forgot a lot. So bringing them to the surface is, you know, that's definitely a thing. I mean, Jimmy Page is a great producer. If you look through the Led Zeppelin catalog and see who produced a lot of their records, Jimmy Page did it himself. Yeah. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I had Tom Dowd on the list too. We didn't get a chance to get into Tom, but we do have. I do want to hit this real quick before we wrap up for today. This day in music, we do this every podcast, and basically, what we're gonna do some birthday shout outs. Guy you guys may have heard of, Lou Reed. Happy birthday. Born in 1942 on this day. Lou Reed. Larry Carlton. Are either one of you guys Larry Carlton fans?
Yes.
Amazing guitar. One of my absolute heroes. Worked with Steely Dan and Joni Mitchell.
That's enough
Michael
right
Jackson.
There. Yeah. That's it. Mic drop. That's it.
You're done. You don't have to say anything else. Also worked with Andy Williams. But Rory Gallagher. Irish blues guitar player, many solo albums, Monster Tone with that Strat. I mean, just like, what the hell, man? Like, just a unique sound. You know, just very, you know, distinctive tone. Happy birthday to one of my favorite drummers and singers.
My girl.
Karen Carpenter.
Yeah.
I mean, that woman's voice is like effortless. It doesn't even sound like she's even doing anything. And it just comes out and it's just like, it'll melt your heart. and we're gonna say, of course, the man himself, the man with the guy with the second greatest hair in rock. John Bon Jovi. Happy birthday, John Bon Jovi.
Rod Stewart, how old is he now?
Rod Stewart, of course, is the guy with the greatest hair. But
John Bon Jovi is 59.
Yeah, see, he's born in 1962. He's a young guy. Hell, only 59.
He's another one. It'll still be rolling until he's still. He's like the Tom Brady of rock and roll. When's it going to stop?
Anyways, guys, so there's just a few birthday shout outs there. We had the band Stone Senate on, and it's stonesenate.com. That's the correct website.
Yes, sir.
That's it.
All right. And what's the name of the new album, guys?
It's not come out yet, but the title is Between the Dark and the Light.
Great title. Oh, I love that. Yeah. And I knew it was a cool title. We got into so much stuff here. But we've been posting some stuff in our Inner Circle group, and you can get more information by going to lulombardimusic.com. So we're just trying to share the music and get folks excited about Stone Senate. And you guys are headed. When are you guys headed out to Daytona again?
We'll leave.
On Friday.
Okay, so soon, man. Soon.
Yeah, Friday, then we're there for 7 nights, man. So it'll be big. Good party down there.
Awesome. Yeah.
Looking forward to seeing some of our rally friends, man. Wednesday night, the 6th, we're doing a show with Saliva and get to see those guys. I got a friend in that band I haven't seen in years. So
I love it. Going...
Ladies and gentlemen, that's a great jam. Yeah. Love that band. We geek out. He's Saliva, yeah. We start rocking out, you know. We're like Beavis and Butthead.
Boom.
Beavis and Butthead and Butthead.
Right.
So stonesenate.com, guys, go check them out. A shout out to Wolf's Customs, wolfscustoms.online. Get a custom paint job on your musical instrument. Keith the Hawk Hawkins. Does your band have a name? The Aliens.
Ugly.
What?
Ugly.
It's just called Ugly.
Ugly.
Get the hell out.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
New Orleans Funk, man. Ugly will be at the Babylon in Metairie on the 13th and the Poorhouse in, I think, Metairie too. So it's like we're doing a tour of Metairie, Louisiana, for the next month.
Awesome. No, man, your band is really good, dude. That was just a board recording or a room recording or something you sent
that
me?
Was a board recording, one rehearsal.
Yeah, they're smoking, man. Well, how many piece band is that?
That's a 4-piece band. That's
okay.
It.
Okay. Well, just like horns,
saxophone, guitar, bass, drums, and that's it, man.
Okay. All right. Good stuff. Good stuff. Good stuff. Good stuff. And Lily.
You want me to talk now?
What? Sorry, the guys were geeking out.
It's okay. You can listen to my show Hot Licks with Lily 6 Thursdays, 6 p.m. Eastern on Rock Rage Radio. You can get the free app or go to rockrageradio.com. I did interview Nate Rowe from the local band Mad Clock, so check that out Thursday. And so Friday at the Sub, the Borstal Boys, Royal Honey, and Huffle will be playing. So go see that show if you're in the area.
Yeah, the Subalpine in Sunny Turtle Creek.
Sunny Turtle Creek, PA.
Yeah, that's a great, it's a little oasis of rock and roll here in the Steel City. There's not too much going on in a lot of places.
And that's one of them.
Yeah, it's one of them, we took a real hit. And and I should just mention this because we've talked about this a few times. If you want to donate, you want to get involved with Save Our Stages 2020, go to this is a charity that's trying to kind of keep the infrastructure alive so that as things come back, bands actually have places to play. So you want to go to SOS2020PGH.org and see how you can get involved with that. They do different fundraisers and things like that. And they put out a cool little song with some Pittsburgh local musicians. It's pretty, pretty cool, too. You guys want to check it out. James and Clint, you guys are badass, man. And we wish you guys all the luck, man. All the luck in the world. You guys kick ass. And I'm so glad you're out there playing guitars. No, stuff isn't sampled. It's not pasted together in a computer. It's guys playing music, And I love the 3-guitar attack thing, man. It's like, takes me back to my Skinner days.
Thank you, guys.
Are you guys...
Thank you, guys.
Are you guys friends? Are you guys fans of the Drive-By Truckers?
Oh, yeah.
That's a kick-ass band.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good band. All right.
You can ask Lou. I listened to four bars of Whiskey Help State. I was like, this band's from the South, aren't they? He was like, yeah, they're from Nashville. I was like, I could tell, man. They already got that, like, nice, raw, southern rock thing going on. I was like, yeah, that's... But the funny thing about that tune is, and hopefully don't take this the wrong way, that shit could be on country rock radio too at the same time. That's just got, that's got a vibe to it, you know. It's double very hit. Commercial, but it could like cross over into certain, you know, different audiences, in my opinion. But I could be wrong.
The more the merrier.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. That's why not like, I mean, so it's where that, being from Nashville, that could, you could probably get lumped in with that whole country crowd, but it's still a rock and roll thing. But still, you can cross over and get a, you know, some, definitely some different genres going. That's, you know, that's a good problem to have. So.
Absolutely.
All right, yeah. Stone Senate, guys, go to stonesenate.com. It's been a great show. Keith the Hawk Hawkins, have a great night. Lily V6, have a wonderful night. RockRageRadio.com, go download the app, and we'll catch you guys all on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.
Facebook slapped me on the hand and I can't like any